Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. David Schreiner Klein continues to be interviewed by Michael Shine, host of the popular podcast Access to Anyone, as we move forward with the miniseries Fire Your Business Coach. Today, David and Michael talk about winners, leaders, and other false prophets. In business, there are winners and there are losers. Are you a winner or a loser? You hear a lot of talk like this these days, but David just doesn't believe business is black or white. He believes business works best with the collaborative model. You have to sprinkle a little bit of gray into these black and white solutions. This miniseries has been about the dangers of the coaching industrial complex. Unfortunately, there are a lot of coaches out there who stick to this black or white, winning or losing point of view. And let's be honest, we all want these simple solutions to work, right? We want simplicity. Listen as David tells us how we can guard ourselves against this tendency as he breaks down this point of view and explains why it doesn't work.
Well, there is an interesting trend that I think is on the upswing. One of my podcast guests is Bob Berg, who wrote the very popular book, The Go-Giver. The Go-Giver shot to number 6 on Wall Street Journal's business bestsellers in just 3 weeks. And it reached number 9 on Business Week. So why was it so popular? Why did it, and it consistently stayed popular. And the book is all about, you need to have a giving mindset, and you need to be in the mindset where you give first, right? And I had mentioned in an earlier episode, I mentioned BNI as a successful business community. The whole motto behind BNI is givers gain. If you give first, you will gain, and your gain is not necessarily in direct relationship to the person that you gave to, right? So why does having a giving mindset end up creating success for you? I think that's the question.
And I want to talk about that. And before we do, I want to explore the idea that why you have very compelling reasons, I'm sure, for why that's the case. And there's a lot of headwind in that direction. But at the same time, you know, we constantly hear about tech CEOs handing out The Art of War by Sun Tzu to all of their, you know, people. We hear about The Wolf of Wall Street, which was supposed to be a critique on Wall Street, being, I am constantly seeing Leonardo DiCaprio's face on LinkedIn posts. This guy who was a wolf, who people idolize. So what is the appeal of this approach to business?
Actually, let's use war as an example. And let's look at Western Europe. Western Europe, you have all these small countries that for centuries were always at war. Somebody was always fighting somebody else. And for the most part, since World War II, they've all gotten along pretty well. Right, you now have common currency for the last 15 years. Aren't we better off today than we were for all those hundreds of years of fighting? And doesn't it kind of raise the level of everybody who lives in those countries?
Yeah, and I guess that second point is the better point. I mean, I don't think anyone would ever argue that we're better off not killing each other, but I think people felt that was just the way of the world. That in order for Germany to do well, France had to be subjugated and vice versa. But now what we're seeing is France and Germany with a common currency, and both are powerhouses, or at least Germany is. But not by, they became more of a powerhouse by joining the Eurozone than they did by trying to take over the world. And that's curious.
Right. You know, and it's interesting, if you look as an example at certain kinds of industries, you know, look at retail, for example. Why is it that all of the shoe stores end up being on the same block? Why is it that all the Indian restaurants are on the same block? You'd think that they would all be worse off because they're all fighting for the same customers. And in actuality, statistics show that when you have competitors or what seem like close competitors sort of in the same space, everybody does better.
You know, this is so great. And I mean, yet while this is so true, well, first of all, I'd like to ask, why do all the Indian restaurants being on the same block help each other? I mean, why wouldn't they cannibalize each other?
Well, one reason might be that everybody knows that they're all there. So if I want Indian food, I'm going to go to that neighborhood, and somebody is going to benefit. Some restaurant will benefit by my patronage. And if we know that we're going to get a good meal no matter what, then more people are going to end up going to that neighborhood. And overall, there'll be more people dining out.
And how does that analogy translate to the modern business world?
Well, because each one of us has a specialty. And even if we're in competition with somebody else, especially for service businesses, we all have a slightly different way of doing something. If I'm a customer and I need a lawyer, two different lawyers might both be able to provide an answer for my legal question. But it could be that because of my personality and the lawyer's personality, I might click better with one versus the other. And if I happen to approach the one where it's not quite the right fit as my first encounter, if that lawyer refers me to his colleague who does the same kind of law, and because he thinks that I'll fit better with that other lawyer because of personality, that helping mentality means that the lawyer who received the business is probably going to be more likely to think about referring business when it's appropriate to that first lawyer, which means that in the end, in the long run, two lawyers who are in competition are probably going to get more business than they would have if the first lawyer just turned the customer down and sent the customer away.
So it seems that there's mounting evidence that this is the way to go, especially, you know, in the age we're in with so much open information. It just seems clear from the number of people also that I happen to know that people have done well this way. I come back to the fact, though, I'd love to hear your opinion on why does the other thing, you know, the other approach still appeal to the popular business, you know, imagination, you know, art of the deal, never deal from a place of weakness. Sun Tzu, The Art of War, Leonardo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street. Why do these people continue to point the way to so many business people when all the evidence is pointing that we're going in the other direction?
There's a really simple answer as to why it appears that these combative approaches are the better approaches. Because the combative approaches look at things for kind of black and white answers. There's a right and there's a wrong. And the collaborative model is much more nuanced, and it assumes that every solution has some shades of gray in it. It's a more complicated solution to try to imagine and try to visualize. On the other hand, as we talked about in earlier episodes, life is more complex than one might like to think. Right? So these black and white answers are simpler to articulate, and they're probably simpler for most people to absorb. It's like, why, if you're looking at the news report or reading something that's short and kind of black and white and simplistic seems to be more popular because it's easier to explain, it's quicker to explain, and it's easier to digest. A long, complicated report on the nuances of a conflict that have multiple perspectives is going to take a lot more words to explain, a lot more airtime if it's audio or video, and it may be harder for people to understand. But in the end, the reality is that life is complex.
So I'd like to take this back to our thesis that there's this coaching industrial complex that takes advantage of some of these tendencies, this black and white thinking, this winner-loser point of view. And you know, we talked about, you know, there's all these books on the bookshelves and there are coaches behind them. the Winner's Edge, the Expert, you know, or Path to Victory. I mean, I don't know all the titles. We can find them. But there's also Jack Welch, who talks about firing your bottom third. I mean, there are all these, The Art of the Deal by you-know-who. How is whether it's a traditional business coach or a guru or a CEO who gets more out of their public persona than their actual operations, how do these guru types take advantage of our human desire for black and white answers?
These gurus and these authors and coaches take advantage of our desire for black and white answers by disseminating information in short black and white bursts. It's simpler to produce, it sells better, and it's easier to absorb and digest. And it's like it sounds too good to be true. And it is too good to be true. Life is more complex. Life is nuanced.
And yet we continue to listen. So talk to me about how this coaching industrial complex, as I use it as shorthand, and people's human wiring to digest things this way is hurting so many business people and professionals.
You know, as an individual, if I need help, if I can go to one person who can give me all the answers in an hour, isn't that way simpler for me than meeting with a group of people, hearing 25 different ideas and trying to synthesize them into something that I think makes sense for my situation? Of course it's simpler to listen to one person for an hour. The truth is, by getting those 25 opinions and synthesizing them, I'm much more likely to get a solution that was going to work.
No, absolutely. And so, yeah, I'd just like to come back to the question. I mean, how is it that this coaching industrial industry that's come up is hurting and our desire as people to digest information this way, or our wiring? Talk to me about the ramifications. Talk to me about how this industry, and it really is now an industry, is harming countless professionals and small business people.
Because it's harming small business people and professionals because a lot of the information that they're disseminating is not going to work for the solutions that we need at any given point in time. So we're spending time and money trying to absorb information that is not going to provide solutions that we need.
So how can a professional and a business person guard themselves against their own mental wiring to be vigilant against some of these harmful shortcuts that are being thrown at them every day through marketing? And to find better answers, you know, because they need to guard themselves against the black and white thinking to be able to search for better solutions.
So you can ask yourself to guard yourself against the tendency to accept black and white answers. You can ask yourself the question, and maybe you can post something in a place where you're going to see it on a regular basis. Does this solution seem too easy? Does it seem too simple? And I think it's a question we should all ask ourselves and then get another opinion. Don't be afraid to ask a few other people for their opinion.
And so here's the tricky part. What if the simple solution is couched in difficulty? And what I mean by that is, a lot of times these coaches, what they'll tell you, you even see it in the books, they say, what I'm about to tell you isn't going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of hard work. But the answer is something like, be really disciplined, use a checklist, you know, work till 3 o'clock in the morning, right? So how do you guard yourself about these solutions that are couched in the language of hard work, but are actually overly simplistic, you know? I mean, you've seen what I'm talking about, right?
It's a great question. I'm not sure that I have the answer.
What would you do? How do you do it? Because you've read all these books. I mean, you've read Vaynerchuk. You've probably read Tony Robbins. I don't know. But you've read, maybe you've read Jack Welch. I mean, you've read The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You're always reading.
I heard Jack Welch speak. He was awful.
Now talk to me about that, just in case. I mean, let's look, what was so bad about it?
So, Kayla was a junior in high school at Stuyvesant in 2011. So she was four blocks from the World Trade Center. So you can imagine what that did to the kids. The year, so for that graduating class, Bill Clinton, who had, he just finished serving in office, he was their speaker at high school graduation. Well, Jessica Schumer was in that class. So she, there was a connection, right? And Kayla was in the chorus. So she was on stage behind Clinton when he was speaking, right? So the next year, everybody's sort of forgotten about 9/11. They get Jack Welch to speak. You know, listen, Jack Welch is a big name. What does he do? He gets up on stage and he says, okay, you guys are so smart. You ask me questions and I'll answer them. That was his speech.
That was his graduation
speech? Yes, yes. He had like, I don't know, a dozen kids were picked to be on stage. They asked him questions and he answered them. It was atrocious.
That was his lack of planning the day before, obviously. And what were the nature of the answers? I mean, was there a theme?
There was nothing groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I was so unimpressed. Anyway.
That's a great story.
So how do you avoid?
Well, how do you avoid the sophisticated? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. Most of these business books, the really, really simple ones say five easy steps, you'll be rich in 2 minutes.
I think the answer to your question is the answer to a slightly different question.
Okay, good.
Right, which is somebody who's a guru, and if people are following that person because the person is a guru, I would argue that most of the people who are following that person are not going to achieve a fraction of the quote-unquote success that that guru has achieved.
Why?
It goes back to something we talked about way at the beginning, which is there is no one-size-fits-all. Right, and these gurus, a lot of what makes them gurus is they have a particular track in their message that's a one-size-fits-all track. And the reason they're popular, which goes back to something we just said, you know, it, I don't know, it was this episode or the last one, something we said recently, which is life is complicated. There's a lot of nuances. There are shades of gray. And looking for one size fits all and looking for easy black and white solutions is not going to, it's probably not going to help you all that much.
I feel like there's a lot of irony too, and you can speak to this if you want, but a lot of these people are telling people how to be leaders. That's a very popular theme, but a lot of time they're saying, you have to follow me. I mean, the implicit, you know, in Anthony Robbins.
Exactly what I did, and you will be a leader.
And how can you be a leader if you did exactly what they do? Leaders don't do exactly what other people do.
Right. And if you look at people who have made breakthroughs, they've made breakthroughs because they have spent a lot of time working on something and making small pivots. And it's that last small pivot that creates the breakthrough. Right. Going back to Thomas Edison, right? He got that one light bulb that finally worked after he tried 1,000 that didn't, right? And what was so different about the last one? It was a small iteration on top of 1,000 other iterations. And so going back to the business books, how can you avoid falling into the trap of just work hard and you'll find the solution? It's not just hard work. It's working consistently, making small pivots every time you take a step. It's learning along the way. It's synthesizing information and observations and experiences and learnings from all different sources. It's constantly strategizing, planning, and implementing simultaneously.
I also think an ironic thing that you can speak to if you want to is that a lot of these people are saying, here's exactly what you need to do to win. But the whole framework of a winner is that there can only be one,
right? Which is
Which
is why there isn't only one winner, and there isn't only one way to win, and there isn't only a win and a loss. Which is why I always ask the question: when you're identifying what success looks like, what you need to measure is not whether you're successful or not successful. You need to measure how successful you have been over some period of time. And it's how successful. It's a scale.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean by that?
Let's take something like work-life balance. If I'm frustrated because I'm spending way too much time working and not enough time with my family, how can I reverse that? A win is not going to be spending all my time with my family and no time working, because then there won't be, unless I have financial freedom, which most people don't have, I have to work in order to be able to pay the bills.
Or maybe you like working, you just want to do...
Or maybe I like working.
You want to see your children grow up.
Right, too. But I want to see my children grow up. You know, Chris Ducker is actually a great example of this. Right? He's a successful entrepreneur. He created this great virtual business in the Philippines. He was working really hard, and he's a young guy with young kids. And he was working so hard, it got to the point where he was physically sick and realizing that he wasn't spending any time with his young kids. So he determined that he wanted to be more successful by only working 4 days per week, 6 hours per day. Right? So he's still working, but he's carving out specific time to be with his family because that's really important to him. So he couldn't.
And he's still very successful.
And he's still very successful.
Remarkably successful.
Right. He's still remarkably successful. His health is way better. And what he could measure is how much more time am I spending with my family? And how would I rate the quality of time that I'm spending with my family? Right. Because before he was probably spending some time with his family, but maybe he was so grouchy that he couldn't focus on them. So measuring the quality of the time that he's spending is another good metric. And he could measure how he feels compared to the way he felt 2 years ago.
It's a function of what you care about, but you have
exactly.
to define that.
Exactly. So it's really based on your values. So you have to start with what your values are and then look at how you would measure success in relation to your values. And again, think about success as a scale, not an absolute. And then which means you're thinking about winning as a scale, not an absolute.
Right. Right. I like that. Winning as a scale. So, and that's so very much absent from the coaching industrial complex.
Yeah. It's not winning and losing. It's how can I do better?
Because everything is relative.
Right. How can I do a little better next week than I'm doing this week? It's like, people in the financial services world talk about saving money over a long period of time, because after, if you save $100 a month, after 30 years, you've actually amassed quite a fortune.
Right.
Right. But in 2 months, you're not going to see much in the way of results. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Also, it would help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. Come back and listen to our next episode as we talk more about winners, losers, and other false prophets. My guest, Rick Duris, who is one of the top pay-for-performance copywriters, is responsible for some of the biggest internet marketing campaigns and celebrities. Rick shares some little-known nuggets that you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.